Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, January 12th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this morning's edition of Weekend Ozarks, juice to go. Christina stops by Native Nectar in Fayetteville, plus competitive Scrabble in Bentonville for a good cause. And the 2014 production from Opera Fayetteville takes flight one last time this afternoon.
But first, winter weather hit much of the listening area this week, and though many schools closed, not everything shut down. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has more in this week's Week in Review.
It's been a busier than normal first full week of the year, at least if you're talking about politics. Congressional leaders say a vote on the farm bill could come before they recess for the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas said that conferees were expected to meet this week to hash out details for the final bill because there are still disagreements.
You've got a few regulatory issues. You've got perhaps a few commodity issues. So a little bit of everything scattered about, but I don't think it's anything that all of us don't feel like that we can't overcome. And the reality is, you know, if you have an issue that you just simply can't agree on, the last stage is just to vote.
Analysts say the farm bill, when passed, could generate more than $20 billion in savings over 10 years. Early in the week, we reported that voters in Arkansas may have an opportunity to weigh in on efforts to raise the minimum wage in the state. Supporters of the group Give Arkansas a Raise Now received approval from Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel. The group's ballot measure proposes to raise the state's minimum wage to $8.50 over the span of 3 years. Stephen Copley is the chairman of the campaign. He says it's been 5 or 6 years since the last minimum wage increase, and many state residents are struggling to survive on the $6.25 an hour they currently receive.
It really is almost impossible at minimum wage to be able to work and make ends meet. So that's why, you know, in this current climate, it's important that we increase that minimum wage. And the federal minimum wage is 7.25, and there is a small segment of 100,000-plus workers in Arkansas that still gets the state minimum wage.
Copley says that after the recent recession, an increase in the minimum wage would ensure those who are working hard can share in the American dream and actually live on what they are being paid. Aside from ballot measures and petitions being circulated, though, another indicator that we are now firmly in an election year is the surge of political advertisements that is sure to soon proliferate the airwaves. The first television ad for the state's 2014 gubernatorial contest began airing this week, and it features an endorsement by current Governor Mike Beebe.
No one is more independent than Mike, so please join me in supporting Mike Ross for governor.
Roby Brock of Talk Business Arkansas says that Beebe's appearance in the ad is a good thing for Ross.
Well, if there was any doubt that Mike Ross, the Democratic candidate for governor, was going to try to hitch his wagon to a popular governor, Mike Beebe, this first TV commercial of the 2014 gubernatorial campaign should clear up any confusion. Beebe is prominent in announcing his endorsement of Ross in this first TV ad. And with Beebe's popularity among Democrats, among independents, and even among Republicans, this is a strong ad for Mike Ross.
The ad should run for several weeks. Ross is the only Democrat seeking the nomination, while Curtis Coleman, Asa Hutchinson, and Deborah Hobbs are all seeking the Republican nomination. But Governor Beebe offered more than his endorsement this week. He also offered his thoughts on the political landscape and electoral politics in what he calls his last year in politics during a recent radio address. The governor warned against divisive rhetoric, and he cautioned about the effects of outside money on elections. He also alluded to indiscretions by former Senator Paul Bukout, former Treasurer Martha Shoffner, and sitting Lieutenant Governor Mark Dar.
On the state level, we've just finished a year featuring three high-profile cases of state officials misusing taxpayer and/or campaign monies in violation of the public trust. This further erodes our citizens' confidence in government and can taint the image of other public officials whose actions are ethical and responsible.
The governor indicated a combination of these problems is harming the public's relationship with government and contributing to low turnout rates in elections. He called for an informed and active electorate, saying government will provide the best services and policies when an electorate understands the issues. And speaking of Lieutenant Governor Darr, he addressed his ethics violations this week with reporters from select state media outlets. After much speculation and the call for resignation from multiple members of state Congress, Lieutenant Governor Darr announced Tuesday that he would not resign. His decision to stay came after the Arkansas Ethics Commission fined him $11,000 for 11 violations of state ethics laws and regulations. Darr said that he unknowingly made mistakes and is taking steps to correct them.
The campaign funds that I used were campaign funds that I loaned my actual campaign. They weren't from other contributors or donors. They were my actual money. Where I made the mistake was I should have taken the time to drive to the bank and transfer money from this account to this account.
He went on to say that he struggled with his decision to stay in office, but ultimately decided it was the right thing to do. So what's next for Darr?
My immediate plans is to be lieutenant governor. It's to be a husband, it's to be a dad, and to be the best of each one of those that I can.
Just hours after Darr's decision, congressional candidate and Republican Majority Leader Bruce Westerman said impeachment may be necessary to restore public confidence.
Well, I think if they see the process working, it will restore trust. If that's what it takes to have the impeachment process and the hearing in the Senate, then that's what it takes.
Prior to Darr's announcement, Democrats said they would likely pursue impeachment if Darr remained in office. After the announcement, Speaker of Arkansas House Davy Carter released a statement saying that his office is contemplating a couple of avenues in which to provide a proper process should the majority of House members decide to pursue impeachment. He said the most likely scenario would be to appoint 8 to 10 House members to a bipartisan ad hoc committee charged with making procedural recommendations to the House Committee on Rules. However, all of that is moot because late Friday, Darr announced that he would leave office effective February 1st. From the Harold and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
On January 1st, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act took full effect. All Americans, including 2.1 million newly insured, will now have access to 10 essential health benefits and can no longer be denied medical coverage due to pre-existing conditions. And with a projected shortage of primary care physicians to serve them, new research indicates that nurse practitioners may help fill the gap. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
Perhaps you've gone to the local clinic expecting to see a doctor, but instead were treated by a nurse practitioner. She assessed your vitals, listened to your complaint, and then prescribed some medicine, just like a physician. So what exactly is a nurse practitioner? Dr. Cindy Cook serves on the board of the American Association of Nurse Practitioners.
Nurse practitioners first originated in the 1960s. This was they were started by a nurse. Her name was Dr. Loretta Ford, and she saw a real need for patient providers and felt that nurses with extra training could meet those needs.
Nurse practitioners must first acquire their registered nursing degree, then continue on with advanced training.
To be able to evaluate, diagnose, and treat multiple acute and chronic illnesses.
Dr. Cindy Cook, who's obtained her Doctor of Nursing Practice, is a family nurse practitioner for the U.S. Army based in Huntsville, Alabama. According to a recent survey conducted by the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, 80% of respondents have experienced or know of someone who's seen a nurse practitioner.
Many nurse practitioners own their own practices and actually provide for a whole panel of patients. To me, that's very beneficial. I am a family nurse practitioner, and I do things very similarly to the family physicians in that we do a wide variety. I am responsible for a panel of patients, and those are my patients. And when I feel that they need, more extensive care or more specialist care, then I refer on to that. But I can work them up myself and take care of acute and chronic problems for those patients, and I do that each and every day.
Experts have long been forecasting that the U.S. is experiencing a widespread shortage of primary care physicians, numbering into the tens of thousands over the next decade. And with millions more Americans obtaining private health insurance and Medicaid coverage under the Affordable Care Act, that shortage is expected to worsen. Last November, RAND Health, an independent health policy research program, reported that the shortage could be reduced by as much as 50% with new models of medical care that expand the role of physician assistants and nurse practitioners. Again, Cindy Cook.
There are always plenty of patients to go around, and so I think that if we use and utilize people's expertise to the highest level of their education and training, then we will do nothing but benefit the patients across the country.
And polling by the American Association of Nurse Practitioners reveal widespread public support for legislative and policy proposals giving patients access to nurse practitioner-centered care and services.
Well, what we have found is that Americans around the country trust NPs as vital, you know, as a vital source of health care and are actually the preferred providers by many patients.
The survey also found that more than 60% of Americans favor removal of requirements that NPs work under supervision of a physician.
Many states allow for full practice of NPs to work without supervision or collaboration of physicians, and patients have the choice of their provider on their own. And I think that, you know, if we can provide those choices to patients, then that's the key, and that they can see their provider of choice.
According to AANP, nurse practitioners increasingly refer to, including in Arkansas, as advanced practice registered nurses, is a rapidly growing field, up nearly 60% over the past decade, with more than 170,000 practicing nationwide, with an additional 14,000 NPs graduating this academic year.
We are everywhere.
Dr. Anna Jarrett is an acute care nurse practitioner and adult clinical nurse specialist who works at Renaissance Health and Wellness in Rogers. She's also an assistant professor of nursing at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, currently coordinating the college's new Doctor of Nursing Practice program. She says most acute care nurse practitioners work in cardiology, pulmonology, renal, midwifery, orthopedics, and as anesthetists.
There is a new role, and I did that part-time for 2 years. It's a hospitalist APN role. Very exciting role. You basically work with a hospitalist, admitting patients, doing the initial admission history and physical, writing their admitting orders, monitoring them, following them day to day.
Dr. Jarrett recently gathered data on the number of advanced practice registered nurses in Arkansas and found a 30% increase over 1 year.
And I looked at Fayetteville within 100 miles. There are 1,087 nurse practitioners. Now, that's the APRNs, the basket term. In Little Rock, within a 100-mile radius, there are 795. In Arkadelphia, there are 122. Jonesboro, 1,511. And Russellville, where I previously practiced as a hospitalist APN, in a 50-mile radius, there are 109. In Texarkana, 50-mile radius, there are 120. So I feel comfortably that we have about 3,000 nurse practitioners today. So that's a pretty good jump.
Jarrett says that Arkansas is progressive when it comes to physician oversight of nurse practitioners.
We do have collaborative practice agreements, and that is for nurse practitioners or for clinical nurse specialists that will be prescribing and have prescriptive authority. But in Arkansas, a collaborative practice agreement is required. And a couple of years ago, it became a little more stringent. Your collaborator, which is a physician, you must match with a physician. Okay, my current collaborator is an ER physician. But at this time, I think that the Arkansas is in a good position. I would like to see us lift the requirement for the collaborative practice agreement.
Granting nurse practitioners complete autonomy. And the timing couldn't be better, according to a 2011 UAMS Center for Rural Health study. 4,212 Arkansas medical facilities surveyed report 282 primary care vacancies, with an additional 470 more expected. Medical clinics reported the highest number, and NPs are expected to help fill the gap. The Arkansas Nursing Board reportedly counts nearly 7,000 students enrolled in registered nursing programs, And Dr. Jarrett says of nurses graduating with associates and baccalaureate degrees, many go on to become expert nurses in specific fields, with some taking advanced degrees. But becoming an advanced practice registered nurse requires extensive education.
It is required that you have a graduate degree. Currently, you can have a master's degree in nursing. Our national certifying body is very quickly moving toward a doctorate of nursing practice as the entry level for nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, any advanced practice registered nurses.
The median salary for a general nurse practitioner can range from $50,000 to nearly $100,000, depending upon the market. But every market is now seeing increased demand under the Affordable Care Act. Between October 1st and December 24th, nearly 60,000 Arkansans have enrolled into Medicaid fund and private health insurance, with thousands more enrolling onto the federal health care marketplace. And according to the American Association of Colleges and Nursing, a current nursing shortage is expected to intensify under Obamacare. Again, Dr. Anna Jarrett.
Well, our nurses, not only is there a shortage, our age, 44, I believe, is the average this year for the age of nurses. More nurses, the most, 46%, are in their 50s working. Okay? So we have increased age and we have decreased faculty. So we can't really produce the number of RNs.
But noting a remarkable trend, Dr. Anna Jarrett says we may see within 5 years a surplus of nurse practitioners. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
What's a millennial?
The simple thing that I hear the most is just like, they're lazy and technology addicted. And yes, part of me is like, wait, this is how I'm spending my youth, like checking Twitter on my phone. But part of me is also like, you'd be doing it too if you were our age right now.
The next greatest generation? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. The best laid plans, it is said, often go astray. That idiom resonates with people in nonprofit circles. Ask Kathy Blundell, the administrative director of the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Who knew a roof could be so expensive?
The ACO has been in the midst of a revitalization project for a while, updating the building from bottom up. New flooring, carpeting, cabinetry has been installed, along with modifications to other structural elements. Then the roof came crashing down. If not quite literally, at least the threat of the roof crashing down existed. And the Art Center of the Ozarks had a $200,000 priority shift. For Kathy Blundell, the planned and unplanned work continues an evolution for the venue that's been happening since she began her association with the ACO more than 30 years ago. When she first came to the Art Center, the building was far different than the multi-use Art Center of 2014.
It was on the corner only, and it was a church, the old First Christian Church, I believe, and a Sunday school building, and that was it, in a wooden stage of some sort when we first got here that then flanked and they did outdoor summer musicals. So it was the church had been vaguely renovated inside and sat maybe 75 people, and it was an interesting, wonderful experience at that time.
The most recent improvements included new seats in the theater and a more contemporary painting scheme for the interior of the building. There are other plans as part of the current revitalization process as well.
Our next thing, which will start when the weather gets nice, let's say, will be we are having the warehouse that we own next door demolished, and we'll be putting in a lovely new parking area, and the city of Springdale is going to partner with us so we can incorporate the look of that into the other plans that are coming for downtown Springdale soon. So it'll be very nice. And then we're going to put a new facade on this facility, which was one of the things in the 93 building project that we just didn't have the funds for.
That new facade, first dreamed of more than 20 years ago in the ACO's 1993 improvement plan, will become reality, Kathy says, but the wait may be just a bit longer still. This is where the roof emergency becomes relevant. Torrential rains last spring and early last summer pelted the roof. Kathy says before the storms, the ACO had been given an opinion that the current roof was good for another 5 years. Those hard rains, though, battered a lining of styrofoam and gravel on top of the building.
It just started dissolving, and it wasn't something the insurance company could cover. So all of a sudden, we're seeing water running down the interior walls that we've just repainted and redone. It's on the flooring. When people come to things and it's raining outdoors, we have to have towels and buckets and plastic bags all over the floor. Not a good thing. And that started coming all over the building.
Kathy says the decision to replace the entire 27,000 square foot roof was an expensive one, about $200,000, but in retrospect, also a very easy decision to make.
We were simply forced to protect, you know, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that we've already spent. We had to address the roof.
Some elements of the current revitalization plan had to be delayed for a bit, while money already raised was used to install the new roof, one that has a 20-year warranty, by the way. The plans for the exterior projects, like the demolition of the warehouse next door to create additional parking, and that long-desired facade facelift, have been pushed just a bit.
Now we're back trying to save our roof, you know, trying to re-raise now a little bit, about that much money. So we've started, and we still have money. We're going to start the demolition process here in a few weeks, so we're going on with some of it. But basically, it meant we had to not put on our lovely facade and move to putting that money toward the roof.
Yesterday afternoon, sitting in the upstairs art gallery at the Art Center, Kathy Blundell seemed relatively unfazed by the interruption caused by the roof repairs. She says 30 years into her tenure at ACO, she's confident the mission for the center remains pretty much what it's always been.
Putting people directly into the arts. We're a place where you can feel so comfortable that you can come and, you know, try being on stage if you haven't done it, or if you love doing it and just, you know, haven't done it for a while, we're here for that. Or same with the visual arts. I'll try, you know, something. I'm not afraid. And we like you to get your hands dirty down here. And we're very intergenerational. That has always been the case. And so, you know, you can have grandmas and in the visual arts classrooms learning how to oil paint, but dad's on stage in a play and the kids are, you know, singing or doing whatever. So we try to put something out there for the whole family, and that has never changed, but it's always been at the center of what we do.
And the immediate schedule for the ACO remains full. You can learn more about the schedule, classes, and the work taking place at the venue at artcenteroftheozarks.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. It is officially 1 week into the new year, and many may be working on maintaining those New Year's resolutions, whether quitting smoking or joining a gym. A number of resolves involve improving health and lifestyle. In this month's monthly food segment, we take a look at one way to do just that, juicing. Recent years have seen an increase in the popularity of adding fresh juice to diets or consuming just juice for a number of days. In 2013, two juice places opened in Fayetteville, one of which is Native Nectar, the brainchild of Wilson Wood. Wilson, originally from Little Rock, went to college at the University of Arkansas, but moved to Santa Cruz, California about 3 years ago. He noticed and enjoyed the way that community is based around local and organic food, and for the most part, bans fast food, trading it for organic restaurants and lots of juice places. Wilson thought about his home in Arkansas and knew there weren't many options here.
You know, out there, it's everywhere. It's like on every corner, it's in every restaurant. You can't help but not eat organic or local or good food. And here, all there is, you know, there's some options, but, you know, fast food is the majority out here. And you know, the reason for me wanting to do it is just kind of change that whole view of, you know, good food can also be quick and easy, and you can also pick it up on the go, you know.
Wilson got started with a home juicer, but quickly learned it was a messy job. Many home juicers split raw fruits and vegetables into many tiny pieces to separate the juice from the pulp. Wilson eats a vegetarian diet, and one-third of his diet is juice. After moving back from California, it took about a year to get the business up and running. He had the idea, but had gotten to a point where he didn't have the financial backing and thought that Native Nectar wasn't going to happen. After meditation and yoga practice, he actually found a business partner in yoga class, Helen Hammond. And as it turned out, Helen also had the desire to open a juice bar.
So she came to me with a wealth of knowledge and actually getting me a lot of information and a lot of background. So it was nice to have her on board, and she helps me a lot, and her husband as well. So it's been a good partnership because we kind of feed off of each other. She's really does a lot of things that I'm really lacking in, so it's kind of a good partnership.
Wilson is typically the face of Native Nectar. You'll see him sitting behind the wooden bar as you walk through the door into the space at the back corner in Evelyn Hills Shopping Center.
How are you doing? You doing all right? Sorry. Do y'all have any questions or anything?
Yeah, I might want to try something different.
Okay. What'd you try?
You can eat your vegetables, but research shows that juicing them helps the body receive the benefits much more quickly.
I could eat 4 pounds of kale, you know, but if you juice that kale, you know, you're getting it immediately into your body, so your body doesn't have to break it down or anything. So you're getting all those vitamins and nutrients immediately. It doesn't kill any of it through digestion or anything like that. So it's the easiest way for you to get great nutrients into your body.
Hardcore juicers often don't want the sugars that come from fruits and want straight vegetables like kale, celery, parsley, and spinach. The menu at Native Nectar breaks the juices into categories such as greens. The first item under this greens heading being kale of fornication, a juice containing cucumber, kale, spinach or chard, celery, romaine, parsley, and lemon. Though you don't have to be a hardcore juicer to enjoy those flavors. The next heading is roots, blends containing root vegetables like funky beets, apple, beets, carrot, lemon, and ginger. Not to be left out, the straight-up juices, maybe more traditional, like the hay apple, which contains apple, lemon, and ginger. Wilson says the recipes came to him after much trial and error.
A lot of trial and error. I mean, through my 3 years of juicing experience, like putting together stuff, but you know, mainly, you know, I did my research. You know, I looked at other juice companies out in California. I mean, I looked at what they were doing, what was popular with them, you know, what things were, you know, what people enjoyed, what combinations people liked.
Native Nectar also has a naturopathic doctor that consults with them. She has helped with things such as finding out what is a good anti-inflammatory, a good immune booster, or good for a common cold. The name Native Nectar actually came from a friend, but is perfect for the business, whose goal is to source as much as possible locally in Northwest Arkansas or within the state of Arkansas, starting with one of the most important items, the Norwalk Juicer.
It's the best cold press juicer on the market, and it's actually manufactured and sold here in Arkansas, which is kind of crazy because all the juice bars that are in California and Colorado and all these other places actually use the Norwalk juicer for all their, you know, juicing. So it's kind of nuts that it's actually manufactured in Arkansas. We get our glass bottles from Arkansas. Actually in Jonesboro.
Since Native Nectar opened late in the season, in September of 2013, sourcing local produce was difficult. But they are beginning to work directly with area farmers who will hopefully grow for them. The Norwalk juicer they use is a cold press juicer, using no heat to grind the fruits and veggies into pulp. See, heat takes nutrients away from the enzymes and, as Wilson says, reduces the shelf life of the product from 3 days to just one.
We actually pulp our produce. We grind it at a low speed, and then it pulps that, and then we put it in these cheesecloths and we press it with a hydraulic press. So we get like maximum yieldage out of our actual, out of all the produce.
Native Nectar also focuses on cleanses, anywhere from 1 day to 7 day juice cleansing. A cleanse is a time for the body and the digestive system to take a rest. The body typically uses 30% of its energy for digestion. A cleanse allows the body to use that energy in other areas, such as healing. Other products Native Nectar offers include shots, but this is a juice bar, so there are shots of ginger and E3 Live, a blue-green algae. During my visit, I took a Superman shot, which is ginger, lemon, and cayenne, with Wilson and two customers.
All right, cheers. To the next step, right? Oh, got the back of my boat.
Not that bad.
No, not
right?
Bad.
The cayenne ones.
No, it's not.
It still, it lingers on the back of your throat.
They also offer detox waters,
which are basically our detox waters are just really not as dense as our juices. They're water-based, and they're more of a flush that allows, you know, that go along with the cleanses that are just, they really just taste good, and they allow your body to just kind of to flush some things. Like we have a lot with cayenne or with mint or rosemary or things like that that really detoxify the body.
He couldn't put a number to the gallons of juice they sell each day, but estimates juicing 500 pounds of produce each and every day. But nothing goes to waste. The pulp from the produce, dried out from the process, is donated to local farms, either for compost or for feed for goats and pigs. The word is spreading quickly, and they will often sell out of some of their most popular items. But you can always head a few doors down to Ozark Natural Foods to see which native nectar products they have in stock. Wilson credits the support of this business and other local businesses to their quick success and to social media like Facebook and Instagram. You can find them there by searching Native Nectar or at their website, nativenectarjuice.com.
Good morning. It's Sunday, January 12th, 2014. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We're going to help you with your New Year's resolutions.
Okay. What? Okay.
Some of them.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody resolve to do something new?
Sure.
So, winter classes are starting Monday at a lot of places in the area, including Track Theater, mm-hmm. which has classes for ages as young as four. And goes clear up to grades 8 to 12. They're doing a class called The Hunger Games Meets Romeo and Juliet.
Oh. But that's a popular one.
I am fascinated by this. Students will explore themes found in both texts, reinterpret scenes from both stories, and using skills in acting, writing, and stage combat, discover what makes both of these epic tales resonate with young adults.
Okay.
There you go. Find out more at Trike Theater in Bentonville. Also in Bentonville, Crystal Bridges Museum has a whole raft of classes, including Saturday art classes. Discover a new artist each week by exploring the galleries and working with a variety of art supplies in the studio. And those start on January 25th. It's $45 for three classes. They also have a printmaking series with Amber Paradin, which would be a lot of fun, doing a line of cut. And those start February 5th. Northwest Arkansas Community College has a bunch of arts classes starting on Monday, including studio recording, vocal jazz, jazz band 1 and 2, the history of rock and roll, ballroom dance, and hip-hop dance.
That sounds fun.
A lot of fun.
Find out more at nwacc.edu. Art Center of the Ozarks classes. The first one starts on Wednesday, I believe. It's an art exploration for homeschoolers. They have classes for little people as young as two.
Oh, my.
Shiloh Museum has not classes, but Wednesday opportunities to learn every month. Their Sandwiched In series. And this coming week is Weaving Warmth, Uncovering Ozark Coverlets at noon on Wednesday. Arts Live Theater classes don't start until February 3rd in Fayetteville, but you can find out more at artslivetheater.com. And the Community Creative Center and the Nadine Baum Studios has a really cool, they have classes starting this week, but they have a really cool thing called a tapas workshop.
Tapas?
Now, you're not making food.
That's what I was going to ask. I like
right.
the food.
No, not making food. But they're doing like the concept in little bitty classes that happen once. They have an intro to clay, a taste of mosaic tile, a sip of watercolors, a serving of acrylics, bejeweled, and a little bit of the potter's wheel, an introduction to linocut. And these start February 6th, so you can find out more at thecommunitycreativecenter.org.
So if you want to know about some of these things, but don't really want to commit yet, this is the perfect little
yeah,
snippet.
Yeah, you want to okay. go and taste it.
Very good.
So get out there and
resolve something. I have to go to the gym.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, two-time Oscar winner Emma Thompson talks about starring in the new film Saving Mr. Banks as the author of Mary Poppins, P.L. Travers. And best-selling satirical novelist Gary Steingart talks about his new memoir, Little Failure. He was a wheezing asthmatic boy of seven when his family emigrated from the Soviet Union to Queens, New York in 1979. Join us.
Listen to Fresh Air Weekend Sunday at 6 p.m. on 91.3 FM.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Weather permitting, there are a number of fundraisers scheduled for the rest of this month. January 25th is particularly busy with several events planned, including Le Chocolate Feast, the Walk a Mile in My Shoes sale, and Paint the Town Red. If you're looking for something a bit more competitive, you may be interested in the Boys and Girls Club of Benton County's Texas Hold'em Tournament or the Literacy Council of Benton County's annual Scrabble Wars. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has details about the latter.
Vicki Ronald, Executive Director of the Literacy Council of Benton County, says several literacy councils around the country host Scrabble tournaments. The local event allows guests to participate in one of two categories, depending on whether they want to play serious Scrabble, meaning they cannot use reference materials, or if they want to cheat by looking up words on their phones or bribing judges.
You sit around a table, all the tiles are dumped out, and as a team you work to make the highest scoring Scrabble game. And it's timed, a whistle blows, you have to stop. We have judges that walk around and you keep your own score, but we verify it. And then we have two categories, the champions and then the dubious champions. And the dubious champions are the ones that they have thousands and thousands of points because they've bribed judges, they've kissed the bald heads, they've gotten up and on stage and done Elvis songs, impersonations. I mean, they'll do anything to win more points. And that's the whole idea. And of course, I mean, bribing the judges is another way we raise money.
Each team has 45 minutes to make the highest scoring Scrabble game they can. The event supports the work of the Literacy Council of Benton County. Ronald says the nonprofit organization, which was founded in 1972, trains and facilitates volunteer tutors to teach adults to improve their English, which involves reading, writing, and speaking.
Right now, about 70% of our students are ESL students, and they are motivated adults. They know that in order to succeed here, they need to know English and they need to know it well. And they study hard and they go on to get better jobs, get promotions within their jobs, save enough money to get a house. And after they've been here 5 years, they'll go for their citizenship. And we help walk them through all those steps. It's just, I think it's just so important. As far as nonprofits go, yes, people must eat. They must have a place to eat and to live and to stay warm and safe. But after that, if they can't read, they're always going to be looking for a handout. And it's a cliche, and I hate to use cliches, but we give a hand up and not a handout. And it's ongoing, and it makes a lasting difference.
Ronald says they have about 50 volunteer tutors, and the organization serves more than 200 students. She says volunteers are asked to come twice a week to meet with students for an hour and a half each time. However, she says that schedule can be flexible. While the upcoming fundraiser centers around the game of Scrabble, the event also features a silent auction. This year, guests can bid on an assortment of items, including a handmade quilt, a Total Gym 1900, Duncan Hines products, and Emeril Lagasse cookware. Assistant Director Kathy Chambers says the silent auction is their main source of income.
We have so many friends in the community who donate items to us. The small businesses and some of the vendors, and we put together some wonderful baskets and gift packages that are really exciting, and that is our main fundraiser. And I think last year we netted about $20,000, which is wonderful for us.
Autographed books are also available in the silent auction. Executive Director Vicki Ronald says one of their board members spends quite a bit of time contacting authors, explaining the fundraiser to them, and then asking the writers for autographed books.
It's amazing. I'd say 95% of our books are signed by the author. And there's some really obscure ones, and then there's some bestsellers. And one of my favorite ones was we got Eric Weissel once signed a book and sent it to us. And we got Graham Nash's Scrabble board, his actual used Scrabble board with him, a picture of him standing there, you know, with his Scrabble board. So it's a there's a cult out there of Scrabble people. I didn't know this, but there is. And it's fun to watch them when they come. That's the best thing. It's just watching them play. That's the most fun.
Ronald says the increased popularity of Words with Friends, a word game similar to Scrabble, you can play on a number of electronic devices like your smartphone, has helped with the event, where she says people often have a good time.
One person said this is the most fun event. They use their, you know, there's something to do, and they want to win one of the categories. And also, it's casual. I mean, it's dressy comfortable is what we say. And we have a lot of people say, oh, I just love this event because, heck, I'm just so comfortable here. And so, and also, it's over early. It's over by 9. And so the younger people, we're like the pre-party. And then the older people think, oh, good, I get to go home now. That's me.
The 7th annual Scrabble Wars will begin at 6 p.m. January 25th at Doubletree Suites in Bentonville. Admission is $50 per person. If you're interested in becoming a tutor, the Literacy Council of Benton County will host a tutor training session at 9:30 a.m. next Wednesday at the Rogers Public Library. More information is available at goliteracy.org.
The University of Arkansas is still on holiday break. Classes don't resume until Monday, but the stage inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall has been occupied for more than 12 hours a day since just after Christmas. For the third consecutive year, Opera Fayetteville is taking advantage of the mostly dormant time on the campus to stage a full production of a contemporary English language opera. Opera Fayetteville's first production was this time of year in 2012, an updated staging of Little Women. Last year, the company produced Dead Man Walking, using almost every inch of the theater to create the interior of a Louisiana prison. This year's opera, also sung in English, is Flight by Jonathan Dove. The story is inspired by the true tale of a refugee from Iran who spent almost 2 decades living in Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. It is the same true story that served as inspiration for the film The Terminal, starring Tom Hanks, though the opera is a completely different story. Tamara Ryan, the major creative force behind the establishment of Opera Fayetteville, says this year's production is following in the previous staging's footsteps.
People are shocked when they come to these operas, I think, because they have a vision of opera as being in a foreign language and sort of culturally removed from them. And that simply isn't the case anymore. I think all of these operas we've done almost feel, and particularly this one, cinematic, like you could be going out to the movies for the afternoon, except that there you are with all of these beautiful voices and the orchestra right around you. And it's nice to tell stories that people can really get engaged in now.
Ryan is a former resident of Fayetteville and alone among the cast familiar with this region. The other 9 members of the cast come from across the country and began arriving here 2 days after Christmas. Rehearsals started the next day, December 28th, just 12 days before the first production. The compacted schedule means 10-hour days for each member of the cast. Ryan says while the past 2 years' operas have had similar schedules, those productions had plenty of solo singing that could be practiced before arrival to Fayetteville. Flight, on the other hand, has an intricate score with many ensemble pieces.
I mean, almost exclusively these huge ensembles, 6, 8, or even 10 people singing at the same time, and they really can't be coordinated until you're all together, so it's been quite an adventure sort of getting that all straightened out.
Katera Stickan, the director, says the dozen days of rehearsal is a tight turnaround, but there is an advantage for the cast. Since students are gone, every single rehearsal has been on the stage where the show will take place.
With a piece like this that is A, just musically very difficult, and B, has a lot of dramatic stuff going on, and it's in English, so there's an awful lot of little nuance that we can catch. I think there's a lot to put together, and to only have basically a week and a half to do it is a particular challenge with a piece like this. These guys are doing an incredible job with a very short amount of time, and I'm consistently impressed with what we can get out of them in the amount of space that we have to do it.
On Friday, January 3rd, cast and crew were in the middle of their rehearsal schedule. 6.5 days behind them, just 6.5 more until the audience was in front of them. As the actors ran through the final act, they were still working on basic blocking and where to place props. including a glass used in the scene. With just 12 days of rehearsal, director Stickan says there is no other way to prepare other than just diving into the deep end of the pool.
Oh, that glass can't be there, you know, and stuff like that. But you learn it by doing. And instead of being able to be so particular as you're plotting through a piece, now you just sort of have to smack it up, do it, and figure some stuff out on the fly, which in some ways gives a spontaneity to the piece that I think is palpable for an audience. It makes the energy on stage so heightened that an audience is going to respond to that. But on the other hand, there's a specific care that doesn't get taken that I think sometimes makes it difficult for us to find the specifics that we would like to find.
She says she has to, as director, stay keenly aware of when the long days mean fatigue and then to give appropriate breaks. It helps, she says, that the opera is a beloved, critically acclaimed contemporary work. And she knows some of the cast, including Tamara Ryan, from previous collaborations on other stages. And she's not at all bothered by the fact that all of these long hours will be condensed into just two performances.
The reason I took this job is because this is on my top 10 operas to direct in my lifetime operas. I mean, that's how amazing I think this piece is. And we have the opportunity every time we work on a piece to figure out new things about it. And yes, it sort of dissipates into the ether, but the chance that, you know, we've made connections with people who will sing this again, we've learned a piece well enough that we can walk into a company and pitch it and hopefully get the opportunity to do it again. Every time that you do a piece, you build on it. But I think from an audience's point of view, I mean, that's what's so special and amazing about live theater. Not only that you're getting this sort of humanity in your face experience where, you know, the people are crying and laughing and giving birth right in front of you, it's also that you're seeing something, you're seeing an event that you and the in this tiny theater, you and the 70 other people in this theater are the only people who will have ever experienced that ever in the universe. And I think that that's really kind of amazing.
For Tamara Ryan, whose idea gave birth to this annual opera production in 2012, the thrills are still there. But she admits the frantic parts are there too. Arranging travel plans for out-of-town cast members in winter, confirming musician schedules, and just making sure 12 days is enough time to stage a challenging work. When asked what's the scariest moment during one of these fortnights, she pauses for exactly 1 second.
Oh, all of them. I'm just filled with terror for the entire process, but it's sort of a glorious, wonderful terror, full of surprises.
Opera Fayetteville's second and final production of Jonathan Dove's Flight is this afternoon at 3 inside the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall. You can learn more at operafayetteville.org.
And this is Weekend Ozarks at Large. Kyle, you always give me tons of tidbits of information.
Some of them useful, but not many.
Right. Well, and you told me that today is the 175th anniversary of the first photograph of the moon.
Right. The first earliest sort of form of photography, daguerreotype, I think that's the correct pronunciation. And so it was 175 years ago today that it was taken. And boy, I know a launching off point for our Sunday montage when I read one. So here's to the moon.
I saw it written and I saw it say,
this is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
Say it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
25 years ago, we didn't think of jet flight. Today, we prepare to go to the moon, and lunar exploration makes one of the fantasies of the show.
If you believe, they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believe, there's nothing up his sleeve, nothing is cool.
Dance by the light of the moon.
What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on,
no.
Tell me.
If I told you, it might not come true.
What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon, Barry.
I'll take it.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone. Without a dream in my heart, without love of my own.
But he doesn't understand. There's a curse upon me. I change into a wolf.
Stars and let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
And, of course, as always, if you'd like to see a list of the clips, the singers, and the movies that we used in our Sunday montage, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
Walton Arts Center presents the Brazilian dance company Compen Cafig Thursday, January 23rd, as part of the 10x10 art series. The all-male dance group performs a mix of athletic, samba, hip-hop, and compare dance styles. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or by calling 443-5600.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, St. Paul.
St. Paul. Where is St. Paul again?
Madison County, southern okay. Madison County. Beautiful, beautiful patch of earth. But it's you know...
A little off the beaten path.
Yeah. The highway goes through there. But yeah, it's a rural part of our listening mm-hmm. area.
Okay.
But very pretty.
Well, there you go.
All right.
You're back tomorrow.
I am. All by my lonesome. Brand new show, noon tomorrow. Daily Ozarks at Large. Antoinette and I will be together on Tuesday. You and I back together on Thursday.
Yeah, not until Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I was going to ask you. You didn't partake in the whole thing in over Fayetteville, the green light Thursday night.
No, I was leaving the gym, and I kind of saw something green, but it didn't faze me at all.
Very disappointed, of course, that it wasn't the Northern Lights. It was actually the scoreboard at Razorback Stadium. But it was fun because no one knew what was going on, and so there was a certain buzz around town. If you were out, people were taking pictures, and that's always kind of fun when the unexpected happens.
Well, and I even heard of people that were like raced over to the stadium too to see if that was what it really was. And
yeah,
and
I was one of them.
Stuff. Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. Because I wanted to prove to myself that it was the Northern Lights that I was seeing.
Right.
And it was not.
Okay.
All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellens.
And I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a great Sunday.
Happy Sunday.